Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, the places, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson. We have two very different types of events in Ames that we will be discussing today, events that make Ames and Central Iowa such a great place to live. Later in the hour, we will talk to grassroots people and musicians who are bringing music to public spaces in Ames. Many of you may know about the Roosevelt Summer Sundays, which have gone on for more than 10 years, but there's a new public venue that has sprung up in town, and we will be talking to the organizers of that. And now we turn to an event that is, you will, if you don't know that it's happening now, you will soon know, because the streets of Ames will become crowded as more than 2,700 Special Olympics athletes come to Ames for the annual Iowa Summer Games starting tomorrow, Thursday, May 22nd, going through Saturday, mostly on the Iowa State University campus. Of course, not everybody needs to travel to get here to compete in the games. We have an athlete here in the studio with us, Sarah Cummings. Good morning, Sarah.
Hi.
Glad to have you with us.
Glad to be here.
Cool. And, of course, Special Olympics is not possible without the generosity of sponsors and the dedication of volunteers who have fallen in love with the organization and its programs. And we have one of those volunteers here with us, Ames local Jan Williams. Hi, Jan.
Hi, good morning.
And some of you may know Jan as one of the public faces of Heartland Senior Center, but she also puts on a different hat and gets involved, and she is the co-chair of the Special Olympics, or of the Iowa Summer Games here. So I'm going to talk to you, ask you a couple questions first, Sarah. What events will you be participating in?
Soccer.
Soccer?
Cycling. And swimming.
Okay, so those are some of the events. And there's also, I think, track and field going on this at the Summer Games. And there's tennis, too. And then bocce?
Bocce.
Bocce. Okay, have you ever participated in that?
No.
Oh, okay. all right, so you are participating in swimming, soccer, and cycling. That's going to keep you pretty busy. Do you know how many years you've been participating in this?
I competed 27 years.
27 years. So Sarah is a veteran of the games, and she's also a spokesperson for the games. She will be delivering a speech at the Thursday night opening ceremonies that will be held in Hilton Coliseum at 7 p.m. So is this a once-a-year thing, or are you involved in Special Olympics all year round?
I started with 8.
Oh, you started when you're 8. Yeah, okay. And then when you train, how do you train for...
My dad does it.
Your dad does what?
My dad's a coach.
Oh, your dad's a coach?
Yes.
Oh, that must be fun. And a coach of which event?
Horseback riding equestrian.
Okay, horseback riding. Yeah, I heard from your mom that you do that a lot. And that competition comes later in the summer, right?
Yes.
Right, okay. And for swimming and cycling, do you practice?
We practice in hours.
An hour?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. And so, and your whole team is there when you do that?
Yeah, in practice with a team.
Okay. So there are, you must have a solid group of homies who you really practice with over the years.
Yes.
For a lot of time. Is that one of the things you like about Special Olympics?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I don't mean to keep asking you yes-no questions. Can you tell me some of the other things you like about Special Olympics?
About the equestrian. I got a horse named Bob.
Oh.
And I got a new horse named Mickey.
Okay.
And I do that year-round.
So you enjoy riding Bob and Mickey year-round. You kind of develop a relationship
yes.
with your horse.
So. I have a dog.
Oh, okay. So when you're not doing Special Olympics, you have a dog, and you've got, I heard you have a couple of nephews, maybe?
Nieces.
Okay. So when you win an event, do you get a medal or a...
It's a ribbon and medals.
Okay.
And a little both.
So where do you keep those?
My mom has them.
Do you have them on display or just in a big box?
It's in the big box. I lost an account of them.
Okay. So you've lost count.
Yes.
Of all the ribbons and medals you've won. Okay. Well, and I understand that the Special Olympics athletes have an oath. Is this? It says, it starts out, let me win.
Let me win. Can I win? I'd be brave in the attempt.
But if I can't win, let me be brave in the attempt. So all those wins that you have, represented by the countless ribbons and medals that are in a box somewhere at home, they represent not just victory, but also all that bravery that for the attempts that maybe didn't produce victories, but just showed your determination as a person. And this kind of spirit is probably what gets you involved and keeps you involved, engaged with this event, Jan.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Sarah really brings up a good point. I mean, she's been involved for so many years, and, you know, the thousands of athletes that make it to the state games, they have really practiced and rehearsed, and they've put a lot of hours and hours into getting to this point of the state games. So, you know, it is the ribbon, it is the awards, but it's also the relationships that occur throughout the year. I mean, this is the height. This is the epitome of all their hard work and their hours that they put into it. And this event really can't happen. It doesn't happen alone. So, you know, I co-chaired the event with Matt Winger, who's a local person as well. We both have been involved for years. We have a committee. We have a local committee of about 24 people who give their time and their talents to making the state games happen and occur almost flawlessly for the athletes because they've worked so hard to get here.
Right. And are there people from around the state, Sarah, that you will see, that you know, people from other towns than Ames that you're looking forward to seeing?
I had a ton of friends.
I bet. So it's a kind of a reunion for you all.
Yes.
Okay. And this is a special year for the Special Olympics in Iowa because it is the 30th anniversary of the games taking place in Ames.
That's right. It's 3 decades of partnership and collaborative work with Ames and Iowa State University. So this year really is special, and we are highlighting and thanking our local leaders, our university partners. On Friday, this Friday of the games, we are going to have a lunch celebration in the courtyard of Scheman. From 11:30 to 1, and we want to encourage anybody really who has had a part in making the games happen, those volunteers, those friends of Special Olympics, we want to encourage them to come and enjoy a free lunch at Scheman, where state officials and board members of the State of Iowa Summer Games, they will be speaking about 12:30 for a program. And really, it's a way to thank the community for the years of organization and getting to this point. I mean, it is an evolution. I mean, over 30 years, the number of athletes has increased. Also, the competition, the level of competition has increased. And, I mean, Sarah made note that it is a reunion. There is this, even for those on the planning committee, you familiarize yourself with these athletes and their family members and their coaches. And it really is a lot of hard work and dedication that goes into the finality of the state games. Because I will say that there's been a competition throughout the year. They do winter games. There's fall sports. I mean, this is the highlight, we realize, but it's so much hard work that goes into it, and it can't be done alone. I mean, that goes without saying that it really takes a community effort to put it all together.
That's great. And then there's another event as well that is open to the public. Well, I suppose we should say that all of the competition, all the events are open to the public, and there will be a kind of a schedule for that. Is there a place to find the schedule?
That's correct. So interested people can go to soiowa.org for a schedule of events. A lot of our events, sort of the hub or the nucleus, if you will, of where this all occurs, mostly on the campus of Iowa State University, will be at the Lead Recreation Center. We kick off, if you will, the three-day competition tomorrow evening at opening ceremonies at Hilton Coliseum. That is open to the public. We want to encourage people, if you have never been to an opening ceremonies, look, this is the 30th anniversary. This is a year to come see it. We've got guest speakers. We've got local people. We've got the parade of athletes that come in. They all line up on the outside of Hilton Coliseum. They all come in to this fanfare environment. There's a lot of energy that happens Thursday night at 7 o'clock. We've got local celebrities that are coming. And it is open to the public, and we want to encourage people to witness really this whole pomp and circumstance of this 30th year.
That sounds fabulous. And I even see that there's a flame of hope. That is, you're going to actually ignite a cauldron just like in the real Olympics.
That's exactly right. We do it every year. And, you know, when that happens, it's very ceremonial. And so I think not only the athletes, their family members, their coaches, they really they embrace the fact that this is an athletic competition and it is an event that's worth celebrating.
All right. And the basketball coach, Fred Hoiberg, will be there. He will welcome the athletes. ISU Vice President of Student Affairs, Dr. Thomas Hill, I understand he's very involved in Special Olympics, will be there and declare the games open. And Sarah, will you be saying some words at the opening ceremony?
Yes, I'm going to give it a speech.
Can you give us a little hint of what the speech is, how you open the speech, maybe?
And I open the speech with Kevin Irving. This is called Global Messengers Training.
Okay. A global, you receive training on the speech with the Global Messenger.
Yes.
Program. And your mom told me you have a special thing you always say about your mom and your dad. And
my dad calls me Big Dog. My mom calls it Sweetie Pea.
Big Dog and Sweetie Pea. That's beautiful. And then, but most of you just know me as Sarah.
Yes.
So that is quite an honor.
Yes.
Have you been practicing your speech as well?
And it's practice of practice.
Practice makes perfect. Or if not perfect, good enough and great.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are some of the events that are taking place. This is like you said, an evolution. And, you know, I did a little research on Eunice Kennedy Shriver and how she became interested in the issue of intellectual disabilities and then how she got involved doing, seeing that athletic competition was a real means toward empowerment and enablement and inclusion and all of these good things that we now are understanding are so important for people to feel whole and for communities to feel whole, because folks like the Special Olympic athletes. Eunice would call them her special friends. They are such an important part of our community that are not always celebrated. And here's a chance to where we can celebrate them.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I mean, there's over 12,000 athletes in the state of Iowa who compete at various levels at various different venues throughout the state. Track and field events, the aquatics events, there's developmental sports, soccer skills. There is such a diverse range of competition and skill level. And actually, I think that Eunice, years ago, she realized the diversity and she wanted to, sort of show the different, the varying strengths that all of us, we have varying abilities at different levels. And I think we know that after 30 years in the state of Iowa, we can certainly attest to the fact that our numbers have grown, that our athletic competitions, where we have them, our roller skating competition in Des Moines, that happens tomorrow. I mean, again, so not everything happens here in Ames. It happens throughout the state. There's a lot of coverage here, and that's because our athletic abilities are so different as well. So I think it's because of her dedication and her vision that we have evolved into what we know as our state games today in Iowa. I'm speaking in Iowa. But, you know, back in 2006, we were very fortunate to host the first ever National Special Olympics. And I know Sarah was a big part of that as well. And that, again, showed more collectively our abilities throughout this country. And it all happened here in Ames.
Do you have a favorite memory of that national event, Sarah?
Soccer.
You played in the soccer. Did your team do well?
Yes.
Can you say a little more about that?
In the soccer, my brother showed me how to do it. He's a good sport.
He's a good sport?
Yes.
And soccer is also a good sport. And it's a team sport, and that must be very satisfying to play with other people and to share the struggle, the triumph, the exhaustion sometimes.
You know, I do want to mention there is that athletic competition that happens, and also how the state games, it really can't be done without the hundreds and hundreds of volunteers that we rely upon. And so I want to point out that we know that there's listeners out there who they have a few hours to give. Maybe they have, given to the games over the 30 years. When the Special Olympics rolls around, we see those repeat volunteers that come back. This cannot happen without the support of the volunteers. And so I want to encourage our listeners, because it is the 30th anniversary, if you have a couple hours of time and you are interested in helping out at one of the venues, you know, our hub really is going to be at the LEED Recreation Center on campus. We are trying to cut down on the traffic flow because there is a lot of walking involved with a lot of the athletes and their coaches and their family members. So we do encourage people to park in the S lots at the stadium, and we have a continuous shuttle that runs about every 7 to 10 minutes to the LEED Center, the LEED Recreation Center. If you think you have a couple hours of time and you want to be a congratulator, or maybe you want to help give out medals or awards, I want to encourage people to come to the LEED Rec Center. We have an information station that's right as you walk into the rec center. Tell them that you're here to volunteer. We'll direct you to the volunteer check-in area. And it really is a sight to see how it all comes together. And I think Sarah would agree with me that there's a great deal of energy and excitement that happens starting tomorrow. There's outdoor events. We've got tennis and soccer and cycling that happen tomorrow. Bocce is our indoor event that happens tomorrow. And then on Friday really kicks off with the track and field events. We have aquatics over at Beyer Hall on campus. There's a lot of variety for everybody. And we really want to encourage people, because it's 30 years, it's our 30th anniversary, that you can come and be a part of the celebration, but it takes that volunteer support. And really, we couldn't pull this off without the very generous volunteers giving their time and talents back to us and actually to the athletes so that they can have a great competition.
Yeah, I've attended some Special Olympics events, and you mentioned that level of energy. It's amazing. I attended a swimming competition, and every single person who finished the competition received a rousing round of applause. I mean, we were not just celebrating the winners. We were celebrating the participation, the being there and doing it. And there's something just so joyous about that. You know, it does. It sort of brings tears to your eyes just to think, you know, how wonderful it is to support and cheer on the people we love and who are just so generous in giving their love back.
Yeah, you know, and that is true. I mean, we've seen at the track and field events, we've seen at the cycling events. I have witnessed the fact where there are competitions that occur, and yet when perhaps an athlete maybe stumbles or falls, you know what? Their fellow competitor then gets up, helps them get up and cross the finish line. I mean, it's a matter of relationships and helping your friend and neighbor cross and actually finish. So be brave in that attempt. I mean, I think that speaks volumes about the oath and really the true meaning of this competitive weekend.
Okay. And the events are listed at soiowa.org. And we will link to that on our website, khoifm.org. Again, for those who are just joining us, there are two other events. If you've been a volunteer ever for Special Olympics, if you have supported a Special Olympics athlete, you are welcome to attend the 30th anniversary community celebration picnic. That's on Friday, May 23rd. That's this Friday at the noon hour at Sheman.
From 11:30 to 1:30. For the locals, we're having Hickory Park actually cater the event, so that tends to be a big draw for people.
Yes. And if you're completely new to Special Olympics, if you've always sort of been aware that there's something around the end of May, but you've never really attended, there is an opening ceremony on Thursday evening at 7 p.m. at the Hilton Coliseum, where there is just going to be a lot of fanfare, a lot of good vibes as the athletes come through the door in their procession, light the cauldron, and are received by the community and by the leaders of our community, really.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We want to encourage people to actually witness that celebration. And some competitions will have occurred starting tomorrow, but we actually sort of kick off the weekend with it's about a two-hour opening ceremony. But we do want to invite the public and really have them see what it's all about, because it really is a culmination of many hours and months of practice and hard work by these nearly 2,700 athletes to get to this point.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Sarah?
No.
Okay. We will be seeing you in the swimming pool, riding your bike, and on the soccer fields then.
Yes.
You've got a lot on your plate. And we'll be seeing you at the opening ceremonies where you'll deliver a speech.
And the phrase she said about open ceremonies, it cares of me, my mom, my dad, and my brother be there.
Okay. That's an expression of what it feels like to be supported and the gratitude and love that we can feel as a community by supporting these athletes, these brave athletes as well. So Thank you so much, Sarah, for coming in to the studio. Thank you, Jan Williams.
Thank you.
For all your hard work on Special Olympics, the Iowa Summer Games, and we'll have more information about Special Olympics, how you can get involved by attending events linked on our website. And now we will listen to a speech that Eunice Kennedy Shriver gave in 2007, just part of a speech. She is, of course, the founder of Special Olympics. She refers to her sister, Rosemary, who is her older sister, born with an intellectual disability. And this was one of her inspirations in life.
Most people feel that I have spent my whole life really interested in only one thing. And that one thing is working to make the world a better place for people with intellectual disabilities. That has been a part of my life. But my life is also about being lucky as a child to be raised by parents who loved me and made me believe in possibilities. It is also about being lucky to have had an extraordinary loving and loyal brothers and sisters who have also been my friends during my lifetime. And it is also about being especially lucky to have an extraordinary husband, extraordinary children. All of these are part of my life too. But in a strange way, perhaps, my life also includes being lucky in the adversity I encountered. I'm lucky because I experienced the sting of rejection as a woman who was told to me that the real power was not for me. I am lucky that I saw my mother and my sister Rosemary treated with the most unbearable rejection. You might say, why are you lucky to have had such difficult experiences? And the answer is simple. Love produces confidence, and adversity produces purpose. I am grateful that I have had these two gifts given to me.
This is Local Talk. Welcome back. I'm your host, Greta Anderson, and that was Eunice Kennedy Shriver speaking in 2007, along with the music of Leo Kottke, a favorite here at KHOI Community Radio. And through the magic of radio, we've played some musical chairs during that interlude and have three new people in our studio. We've got Stacy Ross. She has been the coordinator of Roosevelt, or a coordinator, I should say, of Roosevelt Summer Sundays for over 10 years, a concert series that occurs Sunday evenings in the Roosevelt Playground or Park as it's evolved. Hello, Stacy.
Hello.
We also have Ron Carson. He is our webmaster here at KHOI. He's the type of volunteer that every organization is happy to have because they show up every day and do the job very reliably. Thank you, Ron, for that. And he has been busy, well, last summer, I understand, developing a new public space in Ames with musical events, regular musical events. The depot, the old train station, you've been he's a musician as well. He's been instrumental in the in the development of the depot as a public space in Ames. And we have Michael Martin, a musician who's played at the depot, who's played at Roosevelt Park, and he's also a landscape architect, a professor in landscape architecture at Iowa State University, and has some ideas about public space. So welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And let's start with you, Ron. What has been going on down at the depot?
Well, I'd like to correct you first. I didn't develop the space. That space has been there for decades, and it was essentially vacated. And I saw an opportunity as part of my Occupy movement last year. I didn't go to Wall Street, but I occupied some space at the depot and made the air molecules vibrate there. And we were hosted by the Denny Teal Bicycle Company. Thanks to Denny Teal and Karen, his wife. And it's just a fantastic space, and it killed me to see it vacant, unoccupied, unused by human habitation. And I thought, here's an opportunity. And Thursday night they have busking on Main Street anyway. Well, that's Main Street. It's kind of the forgotten part of Main Street. And I thought, it's going to happen here, and it did.
Okay, when you say it was vacated, I know that there used to be a farmer's market down at the depot. Is that part of what got left behind?
Yes, I loved going to the farmer's market there. It's just such an amenable space to that. And once the Hubble Realty took over, that was gone. The Cyride bus stop was gone, and most of the people were gone. And it's a throwback to another time, you know, where people did actually congregate, and now we're more likely to spend our time, you know, with our families in our living room watching the television than being outside and mingling with people and being part of the tribe. And when we do get together, you know, it's just as likely that it turns to property destruction as anything. I think we've lost our ability to congregate and, you know, be able to connect with people without turning it into mayhem.
Okay, and so you are a musician, and you mentioned making the air molecules vibrate. How do you do that exactly?
Well, I've got this thing. I like to play my upright bass there. I don't get an opportunity to play that very often, and I decided on a, you know, kind of a acoustically oriented music. It just it's just more amenable to congregations of people. And I had a bunch of friends. Ran into Michael David Martin once, just chance meeting. I said, "Hey, I'm going to do this thing. Why don't you come down?" He was there practically every Thursday night. And, you know, there's always people that want to do that. It's a good way to get people together, and it's just a little small community gathering, little gathering of the tribe that we don't get to do in the winter so much because it's 20 below zero. And we've got to capitalize on the 3 months of good weather we have here in Iowa.
Absolutely. So it has been, I should say, a jam session sort of. Informal?
Kind of a song circle.
Okay.
It's people that may or may not know each other, but, you know, somebody comes up with a song, okay, it's your turn. Come up with a song, and we follow along. It's an old-timey tradition, you know, probably like the old barn dances.
And is that how it will continue this year?
It's going to be a little different this year. This year we're going to feature some local bands, guest bands, besides, you know, the assemblage we have here. We're going to have Hotel Virginia, which is Michael David Martin's band.
And he's one of our guests here, waiting patiently to speak.
Hi, Michael. El Rio Skunko Trio, Paul Nelson, many of you know him. They'll be playing there on a set probably in June. We've got Dr. Murdoch. They're a young up-and-coming band that do an acoustic incarnation of themselves. They'll be playing sometime in June as well. And who am I forgetting? Oh, the Awkward Covers from Story City and Ames. That's ukulele, fretless banjo, and upright bass. And who knows who else will be guesting there. It keeps it fresh, and I don't want to play the entire time there. I want to be out socializing, and it's going to bring some interest to the event.
Well, that's great. Stacy, let's turn to you, because there's a common story here, at least, of a vacated space.
Yes. Our concert series, Roosevelt Summer Sundays, began when Roosevelt School was still operating in 2002, and we just continued even though the school closed. It's an outdoor event and open to the public, so we've carried on now. This will be our 12th season, and we are looking forward to welcoming folks to Roosevelt Park, our new space just near Roosevelt School. So,
and when it began, when your the Summer Sundays began, did it start in a similar way with kind of the idea of just bring musicians in and informally just play music?
Our concert series began fairly intentionally as a program of the Roosevelt Parent Teacher Association, and it was a means of bringing arts to the neighborhood. So the idea is that anyone can come. It's at no cost, and it gives exposure to the arts for so many people who might not otherwise be able to go out and enjoy live music. So it was something that we started. We coordinated with local musicians, and some of them played for free as we were getting started, and or very reduced cost. And that really helped us get on our feet. Now we're completely donor-driven, and we're proud to say we pay our musicians a fairly fair wage. So we're happy to be part of the local music scene.
That's great. And you mentioned people who wouldn't otherwise be able to attend the arts. This is often people with young children.
Families, people with young children. You know, if you don't range out from your house much, you know, you can just walk down the street and see some nice live music. I know some of our neighbors just enjoy the music from their own back porch. And, you know, it's nice to see children and older people and everybody in between coming out to the park to enjoy our concerts. There's just so much life there to see everyone dancing and toe-tapping and visiting and doing whatever they do to enjoy the music.
And a nice thing about such an event is that there's no commercial aspect to it.
Exactly. We are completely donor-driven, so there's no sponsors to really honor, though I will say we did get a nice community grant from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau this year. We're very thankful to them. But other than that, it's really just straight ahead music, and we're pleased to offer 90 minutes of a joyful, quiet time for people to enjoy that culture of music together.
And you've been doing this for so long.
Yes, since 2002. This will be our 12th year, and we're just so excited to be part of the Ames community in this way.
The park is so well located.
Yes, it's very central. It's if you don't know where Roosevelt Park is, it's just off of Grand on 9th Street, 9th Street and Roosevelt Park, 9th Street and Roosevelt Avenue. And it's a small park with just green space right now since it's transitioning from the school district ownership. We're working with the City of Ames to hopefully get some play equipment developed there sometime in the coming year or two.
Yeah, I know that people during the sale of Roosevelt last year were very concerned that this space remain a public space because it is so central to the neighborhood. It's kind of got some angular streets leading into it, so it's not just part of a grid, and it's just been a place that has now a tradition of use by the community, and that
very
was very important for people to maintain that.
Yes, that's very true. We were interested in maintaining that green space. There was an initial proposal by the school district to tear down the school building and sell off the land into 13 parcels for single-family dwellings, and such a change would have really significantly changed our neighborhood, eliminating that common space that we've enjoyed for decades. And I think everything I'm hearing from our neighbors is just so much support of the development of the school building into condominiums and the preservation of the park space for continued use by everyone. So we're just mighty pleased with the outcome.
Great. Well, Michael, David Martin, you have been waiting to patiently to speak, and you are a landscape architect. So,
yes. Mm-hmm.
So this, who occupy their time thinking and writing and communicating about space, public spaces, and so what are your thoughts having heard these two organizers of local music events?
Yeah, I think there's a common misperception of landscape architecture as being about plants or about green spaces, which of course it is, but it's also about any kind of thing we would call a landscape, including urban landscapes. And so that is a big part of what we think about in the profession. But before I get into that, I just wanted to say that I'm very appreciative of what Ron and Stacy have done. I played once at the Roosevelt thing. I had no idea it had been going on this long.
Yes.
But I think it was 2009 in the summer. There was I think it was Jeff Hart was providing the PA or something, and there was an open mic Sunday.
Yes.
And so I played there with in a duo I used to have.
Yes. And, I remember that show. That was very nice.
And then Ron, of course, you know, has been instrumental, as you said, you know, in getting this other space going. And that has been great because, you know, if there's there's this indispensable person when it comes to making music in public, and that's the person who arrives with the PA and all the equipment and the, you know, all the stuff that you need to do to perform. And, you know, Ron was doing that, and that's often overlooked. But anyway, yeah, I've thought a lot about urban space and public space and the lack of it. And Ames doesn't really have... if I were to critique Ames as a urban place, I would say it lacks that sort of commons, that one place, at least in its core. It has places in neighborhoods and then down Main Street, like the Depot, that can kind of be this space. But if you think about it, when Ames wants to do something big, they close off Main Street. They'll close off a block or two and do a farmer's market there, or do a, you know, the antique cars or music walk or something. And that's great, except that it's, it's also kind of doing double duty. And I've thought about places I've seen where there is that kind of common space. And if you have a dedicated space that's well located, so let's say Banshell Park is also a pretty good space, but it's across Duff, so it doesn't really work. It's got that problem of the being separated from the rest of Main Street. So I think the natural heart of Ames is Main Street, you know, historic and every other way. And if we had a space somewhere downtown that could be this incidental use space, it could be used for music events, it could be used for all kinds of things in fair weather anyway. And so it would be great to have that. But since we don't, I think the thing to do is to be opportunistic, which is what's happening here and also happening on Main Street when they close it. So, but that's my critique. We don't really have a good node in town, and it would be great if we did. There have been proposals in the past. People have done studios, like hypothetical studio projects in landscape architecture, which look at that space that's right across from City Hall, which is actually the original site of the Ames High School, and now it's a parking lot, and converting that space to a, you know, making it no longer a parking lot, but actually turning it into a kind of a, you know, a plaza, you know, small-scale plaza. And so that would be actually very well located because it's right off Main Street or very close to it, and centrally enough and not split off from the rest of Main Street by an arterial road.
That's interesting. When you were talking about the central space of towns, I was visualizing sort of the courthouse. Some small towns have this courthouse square. There might be a church and library around it. And it's also often the public buildings that anchor the public space.
Right. Courthouse squares, if you're the county seat, not always. I think about Nevada as being a great counterexample, but with what they did to their courthouse square. But I think Adel would be a good example, or Centerville, where they have wonderful courthouse squares where there's a building in the middle of it, but there's also a lot of space around it. So those things serve as they originally were intended to be, as the primary public space in the town.
The Agora.
Mm-hmm, right. Yeah.
Meeting place.
Right.
And, of course, Ames is a train town. Mm-hmm. It was organized around the, for the purpose of being a train depot. So Ron, going back to the depot, is kind of going back to the roots of what Ames is. And the train is also kind of a linear organism. So you've got all of the shops along Main Street probably used to get their goods delivered by train and sort of lined up in a row that way.
Yeah, the urban pattern in America tends to be otological, this word that J.B. Jackson uses, meaning, you know, street-based, or, you know, instead of, say, a medieval city in Europe would be based around a market, you know, or a piazza in Italy. And so we don't have those kind of towns. We go to Europe, you know, and we love those kind of spaces because they evolved in a medieval pattern long before there were cars. And so in America, we tended to not necessarily build those places unless there was some good reason to do it, like a courthouse. So, but I think it's one of the things that gets overlooked, you know, in urban planning, is the idea that there could be a space like that as part of even a small town's center.
Well, I know at KHOI we've fantasized about having this street, Douglas, that we are located on, paved over as cobblestoned or something as a pet mall.
Yeah.
And because we have the Octagon right across the street from us, we have the Ames Historical Society, places that are, you know, wonderful to visit on foot, wonderful to stop in casually, frequently. Have there been other ideas of closing off the Ped Mall? Is kind of a, is a kind of combining the a word that we usually associate with something less aesthetically pleasing, mall, with the pedestrian form of locomotion.
That's had a difficult history in America. In the 70s, we started getting Ped Malls everywhere. I don't think Ames ever did it. Iowa City did it, and they're the one town in Iowa where it stuck. But there have been other cases, like Iowa Falls, I think, is one of them, or Cedar Falls, sorry, where they tried this, and then they reopened it. Eugene, Oregon, where I was in graduate school, they closed off lots of streets thinking that this would work. And what happened is they died. You know, they died as commercial environments because people expect to be able to drive cars on them. So I think closing a street to automobile traffic permanently has proven to not work very well in most places. But you can do traffic calming. You know, you can have cars able to go through, but you can do things like they do this a lot in, in Northern Europe and Japan, where they have the Vonerf is the living street. So it's a street where the car can still go through, but the car is primarily a pedestrian environment. So I think we could look at solutions like that. To do what you're talking about and make streets more walkable and livable and more adaptable to other kinds of things besides parking.
Hmm. And we just had a guest in last week, Paul Doffing, who is coordinator of the ABC, Ames Bicycling Coalition, mm-hmm. and talking about how there could be a lot better accommodation of bicycle traffic.
Oh, yeah, right.
And that would be another way to change the landscape, mm-hmm. The way people interact with buildings, businesses, spaces in Ames.
Yeah, very much so. I think the trend in America was that after the war, after World War II, we basically made everything work really well for cars, and more cars and more cars, and then for maybe the last 30 years or so, we've seen slow progress in going back the other way, and thinking about pedestrians and bikes and all that. And so there are lots of communities you can look at. A lot of them are out west, say in the Pacific Northwest in particular, where there have been successful, I guess, remakings of urban places so that these things work better.
Okay. And the introduction of music to spaces, of the interaction of humans and human vibrations to spaces is one thing that brings them alive.
It does. It adds life to the urban environment.
It causes us to pause.
Mm-hmm.
And change from this, you know, agenda of our days into what else is there? There's other people. There's
right. And I just heard that Des Moines is going to put pianos on the sidewalks in certain places, which they do in Denver already and other cities. And
that Des Moines.
Yeah, I know. And we should think about that. You know, there's lots of old pianos lying around. You waterproof them and put them on the street.
Okay. Well, we're coming to the end of the hour. Stacy, when is the first concert at Roosevelt Park?
Our concerts begin June 8th and continue through August 10th. Our first concert is 7 o'clock June 8th. The Fiddle Chicks will be joining us in the park. So do check out our schedule at summersundays.org, and we hope to see you at the park.
Great. And Ron?
Yeah, we start this Thursday at the Depot Repo.
Tomorrow.
Oh,
tomorrow.
You yes. saved that for last.
Yes, uh-huh. I did. Well, I'd forgotten it. Then on the 29th, we'll have our first guest band, which is Britches and Hoes. It's a very popular ukulele group. They're very fun. I'm really excited about having them. I'm glad they agreed to do this. So look for them. We'll be starting about 6:30. Britches and Hoes will be taking the stage about 7:30, and then the fun ensues.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for your work as organizers, and thanks for coming on to the show.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. The first half of the hour, we spoke with Jan Williams, co-chair of the Iowa Summer Games of the Special Olympics, and Sarah Cummings, a Special Olympics athlete and a global messenger. This is her role as a speaker for that organization. We're speaking with Stacy Ross of Roosevelt Summer Sundays, Ron Carson of the Depot Repo, and Michael Martin, a landscape architect at Iowa State who also plays music. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Becca Brown engineered the show. Thank you, Becca. This show will be available online by the end of the day at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, along with links to the various events that we've discussed, the Special Olympics and Roosevelt Summer Sundays. I guess the Repo Depot is still word of mouth. I understand. Okay. And Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to explore the world of radio with us, connect on our website, khoifm.org. Call us at 292-2878 or simply stop by the station at 410 Douglas Avenue. Your participation as listenership and your generous donations are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.